Senate Committee on Human Resources, February 11th, 1991, Monday, Hearing Room A.
Good afternoon. The Senate Human Resources Committee will come to order. We have several items on the agenda today, and we're going to begin with Senate Bill 26 with Victor Merced from Adult and Family Services.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Victor Merced, Deputy Administrator for Adult and Family Services. I'm here to speak on behalf of Senate Bill 26. To my right is Katie Iman, who is a member of our Public Welfare Review Commission. You may ask her any questions that you so desire. Basically, Senate Bill 26 increases the number of commission members from previously from 15 to 16. It allows the governor to appoint representatives from the following constituencies: clients or former clients of Adult and Family Services, members of the business or professional community, members who are either public welfare policy specialists and or members from the public welfare advocacy community. Previously, the commission had 8 members, 5 of who were former clients or clients of Adult and Family Services, representatives from the congressional districts, and 2 members who were state agency representatives or public welfare advocates. Senate Bill 26 consolidates 2 of the agency's advisory boards, the Welfare Review Commission and the Steering Welfare Reform Steering Committee. While it has 1 fewer client representative in the overall number, it basically establishes more businesses and policy representation on the advisory body. And we think this organizational structure will better enable us to address wealth reform as well as Measure 5 issues.
Okay. Ms. Iman, would you like to?
I'd just like to say that we, the commission thought long and hard about this, and the main reason we went for it is we found that people were operating in the field of welfare who were real knowledgeable. For instance, Terry Rogers was operating in the field of welfare, and other people, and J.D. Hoy, and the community colleges, and they were very involved with our issues, but they weren't on our commission because they didn't fit these criteria. And so this was a way of bringing all the people who were vitally concerned about welfare and the services we provide under one commission so that we could more effectively work together. And we wanted to preserve the representation of the county boards and the statewide representation. We felt that we could do that through asking the governor to consider that as opposed to making it just a requirement.
Okay. I suppose I should ask this of Mr. Merced. Is there a commission for CSD and for the senior services, and then there's another, what is it? What other agencies are over there?
No.
Just about everybody has their own separate commission.
Yeah, that is correct, Mr. Chair. And I know that CSD in a regional structure has a couple of advisory bodies as well.
What about vocational rehabilitation? Do they have one too?
I can't speak for vocational.
Yeah, but I don't know. Since there's so much overlapping, I just wonder if we should just consider putting them all in one.
Mr. Chair, I think that is something that Beth Clarnell's Reform and Reorganization Committee is looking at, although the issues are so diverse in some areas. For example, ours, welfare reform, is taking a majority of the committee's time. One would have to consider whether or not those other agencies or those other committees will be able to address all the real important issues that the agencies themselves need to address.
Mm-hmm. So they are looking at this over there in the House, I guess.
One thing that I'd like to say about that, if I may, because I've looked at, when I wanted to get on a commission, I looked at the various commissions, and it didn't appear that they were broken down by agency. They're oftentimes broken down by a particular problem, like access to medical care or maybe a job training under a particular federal statute, and not broken down by agencies. It seems to me when they look at the reorganization, they might want to look at making them follow the structure of state government as opposed to having commissions on each particular issue that arises. And I think the overlap not is when, for an agency like ours, or a commission like ours that deals with one agency, but when there are so many on different issues.
Okay. So, Senator Kimball, you have a question?
Right, a little different question. That is a question about the name of the commission.
That's been an issue. I mean, maybe you want to address it, but it's been an issue that's been addressed. And obviously, it should be the Public Adult and Family Services Review Commission. People on the commission have tried to, some people on the commission have tried to get that changed. I think it's stayed the same because most people think of it as welfare, for better or worse, and that's what it means.
Yeah, I guess either that or at least public assistance would be a more current and accurate term, it would seem like.
Further questions? Do you have anything to ask?
Yeah.
No? Okay, we want to thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to be heard on Senate Bill 26? If not, we will close the hearing on Senate Bill 26. Go to Senate Bill 28. I want to give us a little review. Okay. Oh, you're right back.
Mr. Chair, Victor Merced again, for the record, Deputy Administrator. To my right is Jim Neely, who is our Assistant Administrator for our Income Maintenance Section, who will testify on behalf of Senate Bill 28.
Okay. Right here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 28. The bill was introduced at the request of Adult and Family Services Division, and the purpose of the bill is to allow us to continue to give the maximum amount of food stamps that are available under federal regulation to our clients. Oregon Statute 411-800 designates as energy assistance a portion of our ADC grant amount. In so doing, the amount that's designated as energy assistance is not counted as income for food stamp purposes. This allows us to increase food stamp benefits to our ADC and, for that matter, general assistance households in the neighborhood of about, about $1 million a month in increased federal benefits. And these are 100% federally funded food stamp benefits.
Mm-hmm.
This bill updates the Oregon statute that will allow us to continue this during the coming biennium.
Okay. Are there questions, Mr. Neely? If not,
just a point. This is required by federal statute, right? To do this.
It's required to have this in state statute if we're going to take advantage of this. That's correct.
If that's the case, then certainly it isn't this year's law. Was this in effect last year?
Yes, sir. It was.
And were you operating this way last year?
Yes, that's correct.
We were. Without our authority?
No, Mr. Chair. This was part of Oregon statute and currently is part of Oregon statute. This bill updates it for 9193. Right.
Suppose something comes up in the meantime, say for the beginning of next year, then you would have to wait a whole year before... maybe more than a year before acting?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Technically, if the Oregon statute were not updated, we could not offer this service.
Okay. All right. No further questions? Then thank you very much for your testimony. Now we're in work session on Senate Bill 28. And
Mr. Chair, is it ready?
Yes, it's ready to go.
I'd like to move that we send it. We got a quorum?
Yes.
Move that we send it to the floor of the Senate. That's where it goes, right?
That's right.
Okay, with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Troll now moves Senate Bill 28 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. discussion? If not, all in favor will answer aye. Is your name to call? Opposed, no. Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Gold. Senator Cameron.
Aye.
Senator Phelps.
Aye.
Senator Trow.
Aye.
Chair LaCroy.
Aye. So ordered. Okay. Next to Senate Bill 205. Senate Bill 205 authorizes a State Board of Psychologist examiners to adopt rules creating residency status for certain applicants for psychologist licenses. David Sweet and Bunny Wilson on Senate Bill 205. Okay, let's go right ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Dr. David Sweet, and I'm the Vice Chair of the Board of Psychologist Examiners, and with me is Bonnie Wilson, the Administrator of the Board. And in Senate Bill 205, what we're looking at is to give us, to give the Board of Psychologist Examiners legal authority and responsibility to have people going through the licensing process to have a second year, so 1 year of postdoctoral supervised experience. Currently, the law states that it would require 2 years of supervised employment under supervision, and there was no mention of it being postdoctoral. We have developed a psychologist resident contract that will outline the responsibilities of the supervisors and the residents, and that's basically it. I could answer any other questions that you may have.
Okay. Well, Ms. Wilson, you have any testimony?
No, I would just be
okay.
Ready to respond.
Okay, questions? So, Mr. Kinnamer?
Well, I guess probably more is by way of comment, and that is it's been a real problem trying to determine exactly what the responsibilities of psychological residents are without any specific guidelines. And at least as my understanding, there have been some problems in the past. Since the guidelines were unclear, it was hard to tell if someone might be out of compliance, for example.
That's correct. And what the board has done with the help of a subcommittee during this past close to a year, I'd say, is do a lot of research into the issue and work on developing a much better, more comprehensive contract that outlines those requirements.
Yeah.
Okay. Senator Trow?
Just heard a review of your budget a while back. Another committee, was this something that we talked about at the time when we did the budget, these activities?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Trow, no, it was not. It was an ongoing process that we've been reviewing the resident contract, but this was not a part of the proposed budget.
Is this going to create more work for you?
No, it will not.
So you don't see any additional expense. You got all those Attorney General bills to pay.
That's right. Yeah, that.
But it doesn't affect the board's operation in any way particularly?
No. Currently, the law allows the board to require 2 years of supervised work experience. What this amendment would do would be to require one of those years to be postdoctoral.
Mm-hmm.
And state it very clearly in the statute that where 1 year could be pre-doctoral, 1 year of postdoctoral supervised work experience would be required for licensure.
Who does the supervision?
Would be by a licensed psychologist or someone deemed equivalent by the board.
Okay. And what's your role in that then? What's the board's role in it?
The board's role, I believe your staff distributed the contract.
for you to review. What the board does is it looks at the contract and requires each person who wants to provide a psychological service prior to licensure for that year of postdoctoral supervised work experience to agree to the stipulations in that contract.
That's basically what you do, and you can do that without any problems.
Yes.
That's similar to what they do in social work for the MSW. Yes, Senator Kenmer?
Ms. Wilson, isn't it basically, this is simply putting into a specific format what already is current practice for the board, in that you're already charged with regulating these people. This just helps put it in a codified manner.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kenmer, that is correct.
So that's why there's not a cost impact, is that they're essentially doing this, although I think there was some risk in the way it was being done since it wasn't codified. People could argue that perhaps their treatment was not fair, and this helps make it explicit.
Okay.
You like it?
I like it. No further questions. We want to thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else who would like to be heard on Senate Bill 205? If not, we'll close the hearing on Senate Bill 205. Okay, we'll just go ahead and pass this. We'll go into work session on this one.
Mr. Chairman,
get it over. Yes.
Move that we send this out with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Kenner moves Senate Bill 205 to the floor of the Senate with the due pass recommendation. There discussion? If not, we'll call the roll. All answer aye.
I like the way you run your committee. At least right at the moment. Okay.
Roll call.
One could vote no and still pass.
Still pass.
Senator Gold?
Aye.
Senator Kenmer?
Aye.
Senator Phillips?
Aye.
Senator Tro?
Aye.
Chairman Floyd?
Aye. So ordered. We move on then to Senate Bill 206, and Dr. Sweet.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Dr. David Sweet, and I'm the vice chair of the Board of Psychologist Examiners, and with me is Bonnie Wilson, the administrator of the board. Senate Bill 206 is designed to require an oral examination to be passed by every examinee before he or she is successfully licensed. The oral examination focuses on the candidate's demonstration of knowledge of Oregon laws and administrative rules relating to the practice of psychology. Currently, this is done at the board's discretion, or the law states it can be done at the board's discretion. We do right now require everybody to pass an oral examination. The reason why we want it to be a law that we follow every time is that when people come from out of state, for example, they might have different laws, different responsibilities in that state, and even people who have been in our state for a while who are going for licensure might not be aware of changes that occur, for example, in child abuse reporting laws. So this gives us the assurance that the people who are going to practice psychology in Oregon are aware of what their responsibilities are for the state of Oregon.
Okay. For an example, if I lived in the state of Oregon and would pass the test in Idaho, California, Washington, could I be considered without taking a written exam?
This just covers the oral examination. We do require a written, there is a national exam that's required. And what would happen is if you were even licensed.
Oh, without a written. Okay. So now they will have to take the written.
They can take credit for the written examination and not have to retake it if it's passed at our level. This is requiring them to take an oral examination. All the candidates at this time take a written, and then followed by that is an oral examination.
Okay. Okay. That's questions, Senator Trill?
That's right. Was this discussed at the time your budget was there?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Tro, no.
Why not? Now, well, this one, I think, clearly does take some time, doesn't it?
Well, again, as Senator Kenmer brought up in, with Senate Bill 205, 206 is a similar process. the board has the discretion in its statute to waive the written and the oral examination. The board has chosen to waive the written examination if the individual passes at Oregon's level of passing, but has considered the oral examination to be a requirement for licensure in Oregon. So currently, it requires everyone to take an oral examination that wishes to practice in Oregon.
Now it does.
Currently, it does.
So you're doing that now?
We're doing that now as we were doing before.
I'm not very smart today.
No, I mean, it is confusing because...
That's why it needs to be done.
Right, it is confusing because if you read the statute without the board's proposed amendment and you're coming from out of state, you will indicate, "I'd like to be licensed under 675050." Well, then the board has to, you know, sort of go through the back door and say, "Well, we'll accept your written examination, but you're still required to sit for an oral." If we have this amendment to the statute, it very clearly states that we'll waive the written if you've passed at the board's level, but everyone would need to take an oral examination.
But that's not changing your existing practice.
That's correct.
Therefore, it's not likely to create any more work for you.
That's correct.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Kamler.
Yeah, I think Ms. Wilson just did a good job of indicating that it is current practice not to accept reciprocity in terms of oral exam, and I think that's probably pretty consistent with almost all psychology licensing boards across the nation. But it's a little bit more honest to the consumer, because it would appear that when you apply, you have the option of opting out, and the board's policy, because of liability, has been not to allow that, to make sure that people are aware of Oregon law. I think it's much more straightforward this way.
Okay. Well, this would take care of the case that we had for a couple of sessions involving the person from Medford who had a license in California but could never... Is that the right case? Is that the case?
Well, I know which case you're referring to, Mr. Chair, and actually that went back even a step further.
Yeah. Oh,
that individual did not meet the educational requirements, and so
what the board
was doing is saying that, you know, we don't have a reciprocal agreement with any other state. You do have to meet Oregon's minimum educational standards. So that wouldn't have taken care of this. No.
Okay. Okay, are there further questions? Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to be heard on Senate Bill 206? If not, yes, Senator Trell?
Just a caution. You give the same oral exam to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is there a prescribed oral exam now that you give, or does it vary? Do some people not qualify because they don't pass the oral exam? Do they get another chance to take it? Is this a way of screening people out?
Mr. Chair and Senator Trow, let me comment on that. We have developed as standardized a process as we can for administering oral examinations, covering a variety of areas that we feel are important for people to know to practice. The questions are not necessarily the same asked to each person, but they have to demonstrate competence in a variety of domains.
Mm-hmm.
It is a point in the licensing process where someone could be screened out, but not permanently. If someone does not pass an oral examination, they are given a report explaining what areas they were weak in and given recommendations on, for example, getting more supervised experience, reading about child abuse reporting laws, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
They're given a second opportunity to go before an ad hoc oral examination committee, and a third opportunity to go, which would be before the full board of psychologist examiners.
Mm-hmm.
Does that answer your question?
Well, it does, to an extent. But these people will have passed a written test someplace, right?
Yes.
Right.
And their educational requirements.
Many of them will have been certified in some other state, right?
Yes, some are.
And then they come in, and the purpose of the oral exam is to talk to them about the peculiarities of practicing in Oregon, Oregon law, and things like
that.
That's
correct.
And it's really not a screening, a device to screen people out. It's just to make sure they know Oregon law, right?
Oh, definitely.
So it's a matter, if they don't pass one time, they can study Oregon law and come back and take it again.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Good.
But your standards are floating standards based on what? Your exam your exam score is a sort of a floating one. Every time there's an written examination, there's a different score, minimum score, right?
Would you like to address that?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. However, the board this last year for the April 1990 administration adopted administrative rule that had an absolute, a 75%. So what we've done is we've required that an individual pass at the all doctoral level candidates taking the exam for the first time, or 75%, whichever is lower. So as long as the candidate achieve a 75%, that would be adequate for passing.
Okay.
Or if the mean doctoral level candidates is lower, then that would be okay too.
Yes, but this is just something new.
That's correct.
Yeah.
It used to be
Sort of a floating thing that
It was determined by that administration.
You could screen people out easily.
Well, it wasn't. We didn't determine the mean. The mean was determined on a national level by all the candidates that were taking the exam for the first time on that day. So we received a report from the examination service that measured that level.
Yeah, okay.
The board didn't do that. We just determined which mean we were going to accept, and then it was up to the examination service to determine what that score was.
Now, California and Washington use the same score, same rating, same examination as you do.
Mr. Chair, I believe they use the same examination. I don't know what their required passing score is.
Okay. Senator Phillips.
Of the people that go through the oral examination, what is the percentage that you fail, if you will, or reject on the first time through?
Chairman McCoy and Senator Phillips, I'm going to give an estimate on this. I would say maybe a quarter of the people fail the first time through.
Okay, so you call out 25% that don't show proper sensitivity to the nuances of Oregon law, and then you've got, according to the answer that you gave Senator Trow, an ad hoc committee and then the full board. Of the 25% approximately that you call through, how many get back in or eventually don't get in at all? I mean, we're talking about 3-4%.
100% make it through.
Almost. 99.9.
Okay.
Yeah.
You've got to really work at it not to get through eventually with the coaching that you assist them, not coaching, but cooperation that you demonstrate to these people, right?
I think that would be a good statement. I think you'd have to work really hard at not getting licensed to pick up that extra information. I assume that most people are competent as a psychologist, have the understanding of the field. It's just when you get to the oral examination where I have found that people really get stuck is they have not read the law. We provide them with stacks of information to study before they even take the exam, and my guess is some of those people don't even bother looking at it.
Okay. Is Oregon law that much different from other states?
Chairman McCoy and Senator Trow, yes, in some respects, and I can't speak about other laws, but where I find this out is during an oral examination when I'll have a candidate, when I chair an exam, I'll have a candidate say, well, in Washington we do it this way, or in California we did it this way, and my reaction is, well, ma'am or sir, you are planning to practice in Oregon. We don't necessarily do it that way. Our laws are written differently. So there are some differences, and that's why it's important to look at this.
Okay. Further questions? If not, is there anyone else who would like to be heard on Senate Bill 206 in the audience? If not, we'll close the hearing on Senate Bill 206. We're in a work session on Senate Bill 206.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Kinnemer?
I'd move we send this out to the floor of the Senate with due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Kinnemer moves Senate Bill 206 to the floor of the Senate with the due pass recommendation. Discussion? Not. All in favor will answer aye. Opposed, no.
Senator Holt?
Aye.
Senator Kinnemer?
Aye.
Senator
Phillips? Aye.
Senator Trow?
Aye.
Chairman
Troy? Aye. It's so ordered. We move on to Senate Bill 207.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Dr. David Sweet, and I'm the Vice Chair of the Board of Psychologist Examiners, and with me is Bonnie Wilson, the Administrator of the Board. In considering Senate Bill 207, what we are wanting to do is clarify the educational requirements for candidates who are applying to be a psychologist or psychologist associate. What this modification is doing is placing a statement in here that when we are looking at their college or university, that it would be one that is accredited by a regional accrediting body, or if it's from another country, an accrediting body that would be comparable in our view. Right now, what the board is faced with in reviewing educational backgrounds of individuals is if they do come from a non-accredited program, in a sense, we have to function as an accrediting body and determine if it's an adequate program, if it's a program in psychology, if the coursework is comparable. This tends to increase the time and variability in the way applicants are looked at. This is not a large number of applicants, but it comes up frequently enough that instead of us trying to be an accrediting body, we would like to rely on someone else who accredits the school.
And who will that be?